Hello and welcome to the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcast, starring Matt Levy and Mike Staub. We love video games and have embarked on a journey to index the greatest video games of all time into our very own Hall of Fame. Here's the show. And hello, Mike. How are you?
Hey, Matt. I'm good. It's good to be back in person. We have to get our schedules to sync up better.
Yeah.
It's mostly my fault.
I'm trying to be the very best.
Yes.
Like no one ever was.
Oh, I see where this is going.
And to try and catch them.
Oh, baby.
It's my real test.
There you go. It really is. I'll tell you. It's crazy to put two and two together and realize that Pokemon in the United States has now been in the United States for 26 years. And Pokemon just yesterday, as we're recording this, Pokemon just yesterday celebrated its 27th anniversary as a video game. So I think it's pretty funny how we didn't really plan to re-record or remaster Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow the day after Pokemon Day. But
if I am going to be a little sour, I think Pokemon Day was just okay this year.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
It was fine.
It wasn't great. I know what it is, Matt, and we're going to talk about this a lot probably as we talk about other stuff on the show. I really do feel that we're at a stage right now with the Switch where it's very likely that Switch 2 has been pushed back to March of 25. And every report is saying that it was pushed back to March 25 for a few reasons. One, Nintendo wanted to give the developers working on the console more time to develop the games that they have coming out. So that's great. I actually think that's a really good plan, especially if that means the Switch 2 launch library will be even that much bigger. And secondly, they wanted to ensure that the Switch 2 or Super Switch or whatever the heck you want to call it. I'm going to call it Switch 2.0. That makes the most sense to me. They want to ensure that Switch 2.0 is in stock. Like it's available, readily available for people to get. And I think what they saw was they ran into problems with the original Switch when it came out and would run into problems during obviously the chip shortages and stuff like that during COVID. But the fact that Nintendo is like, we can wait a year. Amazing. I mean, the Switch has sold so well that they really can wait a year financially. And we can ensure that our launch lineup is going to be probably incredible. And on top of that, we can ensure that everyone can get one. So if Nintendo still has those good relationships with those third-party companies and has good relationships with the indie devs and offers some degree of backwards compatibility and has some real bangers coming out at the top of the Switch's life cycle, I think the Switch 2.0 might have the potential to be the best launch possibly ever, especially if they have plenty of stock. And I mean this just on the number scale and probably also on a quality and content scale, because as we talk about it, it's all about the games. But Pokemon Day this year showed really one new thing that was really exciting, and that's the next Pokemon Legends game, the Pokemon Legends ZA or whatever. And I loved Pokemon Legends Arceus. I thought it was really cool. And this game looks really great, but the fact that they're like, it's coming out next year leads me to believe that whatever this Pokemon Legends game is that releases next year is probably going to be released either very close to the Switch 2 launch and be backwards compatible. Like if the Switch 2 is backwards compatible, you'll play this game on your Switch 2 if you have one, or this is a Switch 2 launch title. So while Pokemon Day last year was kind of meh, this year was kind of meh, I do understand why it is so. And Nintendo's year across the board is probably going to be pretty lackluster in terms of what people's expectations might be.
Mike, I agree with everything that
what?
You just said.
No way. Nobody ever does that.
But, and there is a but, Pokemon has such a rich history. There is no reason why they could not have said, hey guys, here's just a port of Gold and Silver, or here's another remake, because it's been a long time since Diamond, Shining Diamond and Pearl and those. There's really no reason why they can't dip into that long, long history of games. Even just give us Red and Blue, the topic of today's conversation, just an old port of those games even to sell it to us, there's no reason why.
I understand that, and I do agree with you to a point, but at the same time,
they're holding their cards. They're holding they're holding it, Mike.
They're holding their Pokemon cards.
They sure are.
The other thing on top of that, and I really do think Game Freak took the backlash for Silver, for Scarlet and Violet. I think they actually took it to heart. I think this is the one time where they knew they put out a product that was subpar and said, what, we really need to get our act together. Because that is a big thing in Japanese business.
I hope that's why we're not getting much of anything from the Pokemon franchise in 2024. And listen, there's plenty of Pokemon games to play. I can easily, through legal reasons or through ROMs and emulators, I could probably play many a Pokemon game. But yes, I think every year of the Switch, there has been something, or multiple. Most years, there are multiple games, even if they weren't mainline or remasters. We got mobile games, and what was the MOBA game? I mean, there's just always something. And I feel like this is the first year we're not going to have something.
This is the first year, I think, without a Pokemon release in a very, very long time.
It could be 7, 8, 9 years.
Yeah, it could be more than that. It could be 10 years since we've had. There's no Pokemon release this year that we know of.
Yeah, they could always change their tune in 6 months and have something ready to show us.
Well, especially if it's an outsourced of Black and White.
I believe, if I'm correct, and I was reading this or listening to this, that Shining Diamond, Brilliant Pearl, I think it's the other way around. I'm mixing them up.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure those were made by an outside company. I forgot exactly who.
They certainly were. I forget the company that worked on
them.
And
it was a really good remaster.
I like them, actually. I thought those were a lot of fun. So I think maybe if Nintendo is holding something back for like a Direct that they'll probably do in June or so, that might be something that they work with the Pokemon company to just go, hey,
I don't think they want to announce something 10 months out. They don't do that anymore. That's not Nintendo's style or Pokemon style. No. So I think that you're right. But let's talk about the main attraction, Mike.
Yeah.
We can hypothesize about what's going to happen, but we know what happened back in the States in 1998.
Yeah, 98, September, I believe it was September 28th, 1998, Pokemon Red and Blue released in the United States. And it was done perfectly because Pokemon had already been out for 2 years in Japan. February 27th, 1996, they come out in Japan. So it's over 2 years. Pokemon has already been building for 2 years. And when you look at it, it's kind of funny because it's like, oh, the Game Boy had only been out for like 6 years or 7 years in Japan at this point. But by the time Pokemon comes out in the United States in September of 1998, the Game Boy is close to 10 years old.
Was the Game Boy Color already out at that point?
No.
Okay.
So the Game Boy Color, I believe the Game Boy Color releases in, I want to say November of 1998, but
October 21st, 1998.
So I was close.
A mere weeks.
So this comes out probably about a month, right? Pokemon releases about a month before the Game Boy Color. Nintendo knows this. They know they're going to need something to launch with the Game Boy Color. And what's funny is that the first two Pokemon games don't even use the Game Boy Color stuff. The first two Pokemon games are monochrome color on the Game Boy Color.
I think on the Super Game Boy is the first time you can see those games some small modifications to color.
Yeah, so absolutely. The big thing for the Game Boy Color was Link's Awakening DX, which was like a fully colored version re-release of that game. Yeah, so Pokemon releases, so you have that driver. And it's even better planned because Pokemon, the cartoon, the anime, debuts in the United States, I want to say on like September 8th.
And it was freaking huge.
Huge. So you've got 3 weeks. And it was on for us here in New York in the Long Island area. It was on in the morning before school started. So you would get up at like 6 a.m. to start getting ready for school. And then I think by like 6:30 or 7, Pokemon was on. And
you couldn't miss it. You wanted to see what happened to Ash's Metapod.
Yeah, exactly. And they they had that whole first season of Pokemon, which they would run over and
the first initial like 60 episodes, give or take?
Yeah, it's probably whatever would get them into syndication. So it's probably like 53 to 60 episodes. It might be less. It might actually be fewer than that. But Yeah, they released that cartoon, and I think it started on like the first day of school for those of us who are in the North. And we watched it every day and we're like, what is this? What is this? And then 3 weeks later, 20 days later, Pokemon Red and Blue come out for Game Boy. And all of the kids like me, who hadn't touched their Game Boy in years because it was 10 years old at this point, and we had moved on. The PlayStation 2 was only like 2 years away. The Dreamcast was a year away. We were playing N64 and PlayStation. So it was like, well, time to dust off the Game Boy. And I remember getting Pokemon Red on Columbus Day it was mid-October. So it was probably right before the Game Boy Color came out.
And anyone who's owned this game, you remember that box art. I mean, the box art to Pokemon Red and Blue, having the Charizard and Blastoise on the front. I mean, probably some of the most memorable box art in game history. But what was it like playing Pokemon Red back in 98?
It was really just, it was cool because one, I was shown the game by a friend of mine who was playing it on his Game Boy Pocket. And Game Boy Pocket was kind of like the original Game Boy. It was smaller, it was sleeker, and it had a really sharp black and white screen, not monochrome green. And he was like, you got to play this. And I was really into RPGs at the time. So this is a year after Final Fantasy VII essentially releases. I don't quite remember the release date for the United States version of Final Fantasy VII. I think that might not have come out till much later in 97. But I've probably been playing Final Fantasy VII for about a year. Obviously, I love Final Fantasy VI and Final Fantasy IV and Final Fantasy Tactics and Super Mario RPG and Chrono Trigger and Secret of Mana. So RPGs were starting to become part of my diet. And at 12, getting Pokemon, this turn-based RPG in a handheld space where I could save anywhere. There was tons of turn-based battles to play. And they had this amazing monster capturing mechanic that just made every battle feel like it had another level of importance. It was like, oh, I could catch that guy and then I could use that guy. And to this day, there is not a single game series on the planet that does monster capturing and monster raising, in my opinion, better than Pokemon does. And I think it's because they make all of the creatures so likable and unique to the point where you want to catch them all because you want to see what happens and the whole thing where they evolve and how the evolutions work. It's like, it's a very, very incredibly smart way to design a system. Also to where you've got the marketing built into it right away with the whole got 'em, catch 'em all line. And we would talk about Pokemon, especially after the holidays, because I had Pokemon in October. I was playing it on an old Game Boy, an original Game Boy. I'd cleared my first like playthrough of the original Pokemon was done with my original Game Boy. And for Christmas that year, I got a Game Boy Color. My brother got a Game Boy Color. He got Pokemon Blue. So we would trade and do all that stuff. And then we bought another version of Pokemon Red so that we could get all the starter Pokemon and all the special stuff and like trade back and forth with ourselves. And it was inescapable. Pokemon was everywhere. And it kind of still is, which is really, really incredible. But yeah, what you would do, you would play the game, you'd watch the cartoon, you'd talk about it with your friends at school, you would bring your Game Boy to school with you to play Pokemon, and hopefully sit down with friends and battle or trade or do any of that stuff.
Mike, it speaks to what you said in that everyone has their own team, their own favorite Pokemon. And you said each one is designed so brilliantly. I knew people that their favorite Pokemon was a Diglett. I knew someone that their favorite Pokemon was a Scyther. And who am I to sit here and say that their favorite Pokemon is wrong? And that's something that I actually want to kind of jump in with you, Mike. There are probably crowd favorites. There are probably fan favorites. You got Pikachu, you got Charizard, you got the starter Pokemon. But I want to hit you with live here on the podcast of the original 50 or 151. We can say 51 with Mew, even though Mew wasn't in the original games. What are some of your favorites? Whether you give us 3, 4, 5, what are some of your favorite original designs?
Yeah. So for me, my favorite Pokemon, my first starter Pokemon ever was Blastoise or Squirtle. So I immediately, what's funny is I bought Pokemon Red, but my first Pokemon was Squirtle. Looking back, it probably would make more sense to probably have chosen Charmander, but Squirtle and Blastoise were, Squirtle, Wartortle, Blastoise were my like original favorite Pokemon to have. And I love those Pokemon so much. I'm also, I'm a big fan of Zapdos in that original series. I really do love electric-based Pokemon. I think it might be my favorite type in this day and age. But in the original, yeah, it's Blastoise, it's Zapdos, it's Primeape. I really like Primeape a lot. I'm just trying to think. I love Charizard and I love Venusaur too. I like all the starter three. I mean, you can't not like Pikachu and Raichu. These are just fantastic Pokemon out there. And those are the ones I always like kind of go to when I think about the original. And I had an Eevee. I evolved my Eevee into a Flareon. So by the end of the game, I had this really great, well-rounded team of kind of all the types represented. I really like Haunter and Gengar.
Yeah.
As well. So yeah, those are of the beginning Pokemon of the first generation of Pokemon. Those are among my favorite.
And what's so cool is in that group, first off, no one would ever name the same as you. Not because they're not great ones you picked, is that there's something about an individual choice. There's some aren't necessarily better than others circumstantially. And you also named many different types. You named some electric, you named some fire, you named some water Pokemon in there. You named all different types. This game has bug type, rock type, ghost type. There's such a depth to the game. You also named a legendary Pokemon in Moltres that even from the beginning, the first games, they had these legendary Pokemon that were that much harder to capture. So this game had incredible depth. They probably could have done 50 Pokemon in the first game and it probably would have been a success, but they had this grand design and an idea to do 105 to start. And obviously, as you said, the cards in the show, it was this like three punch system that you were getting hit with, card, show, game. The content was all kind of consistent with one another.
Well, what's crazy about that too, is that the card game in Japan took almost a year to come out after the game's release. So the game's release at the end of February in Japan, and the card game comes out in October of 96 in Japan. But
in the States, we got all three at the same time, more or less.
Pretty much. Yeah. So the game comes out in late September. Game Boy Color comes out in October. The Pokemon trading card game hits in December of 1998, just in time for people to fight over Charizard for Christmas. And what I do find hilarious is that they finally corrected the back of the card, I think, because the Pokeball on the back of the card opens the wrong way, but I think they just corrected it. So that is now the correct way of doing it. And it was originally published in the United States by Wizards of the Coast, who famously make Magic.
Yep.
But I do believe the Pokemon Company and Nintendo make the game now. So it's pretty much the same as it is over in Japan. And the game is still going. The card game is still going. It's actually a very good
card game. The card game is very good. You're right. I mean, that's still a key part of their business model, is releasing the cards in tandem with each of the new games. Obviously, Scarlet and Violet have their own series of cards that you can go out and get in packs. And there's millions upon millions of dollars of revenue. They actually limit how much you can buy when you go in certain stores because they don't want you to buy them all out and be selling them online.
We can thank Logan Paul or whatever his name is, whatever the Paul brothers, we can thank them for that because they were cracking Pokemon cards on some Twitch stream and then everyone went berserk because of the money and started getting into fights at Target over Pokemon cards. So now they have to like hide them behind the register.
People want Michael Jordan shoes and they want Pokemon cards. Those are things we have to hold back from people.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good. What it is.
I don't wear Jordans, but I do wear Nike, and I get it.
So, 1998, Pokemon comes out. As you talked about, the concept of evolutions is this fascinating thing because, as we said, they could have just had enough where you capture them, level them up. But the fact that they change, you talk about the Squirtle to Wartortle to Blastoise. There's something about the cuteness of the first forms. You usually get the angry versions in the third form. Somewhere in the middle, it's like, hey, how do we toughen up these cute little ones? Like, Wartortle's got like this angry face and he's cute and little.
What's funny, I think I always equate it to like kid, teenager, and adult.
Sure.
And you got, usually the middle one is kind of like the brattiest of them.
Yeah,
the angsty. Like, they're kind of gangly and they're kind of like awkward and they don't know how their body works. And then by the time you get to the final evolution, they're like big and like adult and like well proportioned. So you start with like Squirtle, who's this like cute little turtle. And then he goes to like this gangly, nasty looking teenager turtle. And then by Blastoise, he's confident. He's got giant water cannons in his back. He's a big boy. He's got that big shell.
It's a great thing. And the concept of evolutions, they could have just made it. You get to a certain level. Let's say everyone gets to level 20 or 15, but each Pokemon actually levels up at different levels. Some of them you need to trade them to make them evolve.
Yep.
Some of them you got to use the correct stone to make them evolve.
Yep.
This is just, again, it is baby's first RPG. In a nice way, I say that. It's a great way to introduce someone to RPGs, but it still has so much depth.
It does. And I think that's what makes it so compelling, is that the depth is really there. Like there are, I think it's called EV training.
Yep.
And if you play Pokemon seriously and professionally, your Pokemon stats actually change based on the Pokemon that they beat. So if you want like a really fast Pokemon, you have to like beat a whole bunch of Rattatas, like you're to get that EV skill up. So there's this really intricate leveling system that exists underneath the surface of Pokemon. And that's true across the board. And when you ever watch like the Pokemon World Championships with like whatever the teams are, they're never what you'd expect. They're always like total oddball Pokemon, a lot of status effects. Like Lapras is always like the best thing ever because it's like, I guess it's got so much defense. But yeah, no, it's an incredible thing. And for an RPG, it's really cool because RPG gamers, I always say this about D&D, RPGs attract people for a whole bunch of different reasons. They attract like the people who like story and emotion and like people who like film, right? And theater, because like, oh, they want to see that. They want to see the emotion. They want to see the emotional moment you get when in Pokemon, especially like in the anime, when like Pikachu almost leaves and then Ash lets Butterfree fly away. And like, you kind of get that kind of emotional storytelling in that game with the bad guys with Team Rocket and Giovanni and all that stuff. And then you got like the folks who are like, I just want to explore and walk around this world and find things. And Pokemon does that. And then you have the number crunchers and the grinders and the people that just want to beat things over the head and deal the most damage. So
there's really different ways to play the game.
Yeah.
Different ways to approach it that can bring in a mass amount of people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely appeals to a lot of people. And then it's got people who just like cute animals.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, we like cute animals.
It's a cozy game too.
Yeah, it can be very much a cozy game, or something attached to Pokemon can be a cozy game.
Well, but what I like, Mike, and this goes not against, but goes with everything we say on every episode of this podcast, is Pokemon never pushed the latest graphics. It's mostly been a handheld franchise besides the Switch, which is Switch is a handheld system. But the game has always been about good art design for the monsters.
Yes.
And good gameplay and mechanics. Yet it's one of the best, most played franchises, but they could care less what it looks like.
No, they really don't. And it's, I think, as always, the monsters have to look good. I think they want the monsters to look as good as they possibly can, given the restrictions of whatever console they're on. But I do believe that Pokemon is the single most profitable franchise or property ever. Like, if we took every individual property and broke it down, like not Disney on the whole, but like Mickey Mouse or Star Wars or anything like that, I think Pokemon is the most profitable by like not a little bit, by like leaps and bounds. Like it's almost insane how much money Pokemon has made over the years because it is hyper focused on the one brand, but it does expand so much into what culture.
Because there's so much you can do with it, Mike. I mean, you can make a live action movie, which they did.
Yep.
You can make animated movies, which they did. You can make toys. You can make stuffed animals. You can make board games. There's really an endless amount of content and merchandise, shirts, obviously, clothing. There's so much you can do with the franchise, and they do it, and all of it makes money.
It all makes money. It also plays into, and we've talked about this before, and you're 100% right. There's a lot you can do with it. It being as marketable as it is.
Yeah.
And it all starts with red, blue, and yellow. I mean, red, blue, and yellow are just marketing darlings. Like you talked about the cover art, right? Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow, even from the cover art on those games, does something that I bring up every now and again when we talk about games and what makes them special and why people feel so attached to them. There is a bit of identity crafting. and image crafting that is attached to Pokemon all the way back to the beginning. Who your favorite Pokemon are and what Pokemon you want to work with and use are often indicative of your personality, or in a way are an extension of who you are as a person and your identity. So we continue to go back to it to find what other weird Pokemon and what other monsters we've seen that we also like, that feel like they fit within whatever our vibe is. And you could be a hardcore professional player who only wants to play the best stuff, or you could be someone who wants to go, you know what? I just really like fire Pokemon. I'm a fiery guy. I just want fire Pokemon all day. But even to this day, when you go back and play them, like, yeah, I named my favorites from like the first 151, but like there are still more today that I love.
Oh, yeah. Some of our favorites are in the newest or newer generation, new gens of these games.
Yeah.
Mike, something you said that was interesting is, yes, we know the card game, the show, the games, all, at least in the States, existed just around the same time about. I think each one of them had to be as good as they were for Pokemon to be as big as it is. Because if the show wasn't good, and it is, you can say what you want about the show, it's well made, the characters are relatable, it has heart, it's got humor, it really fits into that like time period and still is watchable today. And the card game you said as well, it's actually one of the better card games out there. It's a perfect trio that no one can ever like try and compete with.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's all of it is simple. Everything Pokemon puts out is simple. The games are simple, even though they have intricacies underneath the hood. I understand. I just spoke before about the depth of the systems. But on the base level, they're simple. They're easy to grasp and they make sense. The anime, same way. It is not a convoluted mess of a show.
No.
Like a lot of anime gets. It doesn't have that going for it. It has a little bit of the slice of life. It's got a little bit of the shonen anime. Like, I'm going to be the very best. It's got the humor. It's got all that stuff. It really works out really, really well. And I think is instrumental in anime success in the United States. And the card game the art is good. It looks like the Pokemon right from the game came out right onto the card. The systems make sense in regards to feeling like the actual video game, which I think is a big thing. And having those all at the same tone, you could really surround yourself with just this. Like, you could be a gamer and just really interact with Pokemon stuff and like be fine.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing else. If you look at Dragon Ball, it didn't have video games for a long time that were successful.
Yeah.
And the card game is kind of bad.
Yeah,
it was out back then. Yeah. You can look at successful card games like Might and Magic. It didn't have a TV show or a video game that was successful. This is so darn unique. And then, as we said, building upon it and building upon it in the future. They could have just stopped at Red, Blue, and Yellow and fizzled out. But as we said, current sequels, having more content and Super Game Boy, having the trading component, the community component of it, having Pokemon Stadium interaction from the original games.
Yeah.
There's just so much they built upon the original where they could have made missteps. For a long time, Pokemon really like had a perfect score. They were 10 out of 10 like for a while. Yeah. You couldn't say a bad thing about them.
Yeah, and you could take your Pokemon with you. You could trade them up to the next game, and that's something that is special. There are some folks out there who had their same Pokemon with them since 1998.
Yep.
There have been ways to do it over time. And if you grew up and played alongside the original games, you could have moved all your Pokemon from Pokemon Red or Pokemon Blue or Pokemon Yellow to Pokemon Gold and Silver to the GBA games, from the GBA games to the DS games, and so on and so forth. There's some people out there right now who have a Pikachu or Blastoise or a Charmander or a Charizard that they've had for like close to 30 years. So that's another thing too. They feel like you're part of the fun and that they're actually your friends. And Game Freak, the whole point of Pokemon from the beginning, Game Freak, which starts off as a magazine, a video game fanzine, started by Satoshi Tajiri, Ken Sugimori, and Junichi Masuda in Japan. I think probably around Tokyo. They started Game Freak as a magazine. And in the 80s, and then eventually they started making games, and they started making games for the Nintendo, for the NES. And I think they worked on Yoshi, the original Yoshi game, Mario, Mario, things like that. The reason why they created Pokemon was because Tajiri kind of saw what was happening with urban expansion in Japan, especially around Tokyo, and how back when he was a kid, he could just go out and kind of explore. You could go out and explore the fields and the environment and the world around you, and you could collect bugs. And that's all Pokemon was supposed to be. It was supposed to be something like that, but they wanted to build in a trading mechanic because Tajiri and the other folks, Sugimori and Matsuda, they had this vision of like bugs moving through the link cable from Game Boy to Game Boy. And that's really where the idea of Pokemon kind of comes from. And they released in Japan, they released Red and Green in 1996. It's massive. It takes over everything. And American magazines probably pick up on it by the middle end of 96. And then through 97, be like, this is coming here. It's going to be a huge deal. It's going to be the biggest thing ever. And then Pokemon hits in America in 1998 and absolutely takes over everything. And I think a lot of folks at that point in time, a lot of kids who started then, if they're still playing, it's because of pretty much being able to go on this continuous journey over the last 26 years to experience these worlds and this overarching larger world that they can experience with all the different regions, whether they be based on Tokyo or Kyoto or Hawaii or New York or mm-hmm. Paris. And there are more, I know. And then as you move on, I think that is all part of it. I think it's all part of it. And the gameplay really hasn't changed all that much.
No.
Since the beginning?
No, you're right. There's the people that love battling in these games. They play it because they want to level up and battle. There are some people that like to explore and they want to talk to everybody and explore every inch of every town and every area and every cave. And then, like you said, there's the collecting side of it, which is extremely addicting if you're into that.
Yep.
Either collecting all the Pokemon in the Pokédex, collecting rare items in these games. Now, Mike, going back to the originals, were you a complete the Pokédex kind of guy?
On the first game, I was. On the first game, because we were kids. We were 12, right? We were 12 years old. It was pretty much like I had finished Link's Awakening on my Game Boy Color, and I was like, okay, cool. I'm just going to go back to playing Pokemon. And at that point in time, once you beat the Elite Four a few times and you get your all whatever you have, your Pokemon kind of saved in their Pokemon history there, you know, the next thing you want to do is you want to go, all right, well, I got to catch all these Pokemon. So then you go out and you catch them all. And I was a completionist on the first game. And then I didn't play Pokemon for a long time. And I'm not a completionist with Pokemon now. I just want the Pokemon that I want to have. And I have a pretty good collection now because I keep moving them with me through the Pokemon Home and stuff like Pokemon Go. But ultimately, in the end, no, I just want in each game, I want like, I don't know, the 40 or 50 that I really like.
Yeah, some essentials. I did it as well on the original Pokemon Red with the help of my brother and my friends. We did a lot of trading to get to that point. The only other time I did complete a Pokédex was in Let's Go, where I traveled far and wide. I spent probably thousands of hours playing that game the first year, year and a half that it was out. If I heard that there was a Dragonite somewhere in Long Beach, which is a place on Long Island, I traveled there. I drove 45 minutes and walked around for half an hour on a pier because I thought a Pokemon might appear in that spot. So that was the next and last time that I completed a Pokédex. But there is something extremely gratifying about catching the next one, about catching a Pokemon that you particularly like, seeing them evolve and filling out that Pokédex. It's really a magical thing. So I want to hit some moments really quick from this original game, Mike, that you sure might remember. Of course, you have the initial Professor Oak picking your starter Pokemon. You have a lot of people got stopped at. You escape out the back of a house and there's a tree in your way and you have to unlock the ability to cut the tree down, which was one of those water cooler moments, had to figure that out. Getting on the cruise ship and completing that whole section of the game was really special. Finding the safari in one of the later worlds and actually exploring that, which is very tricky. And then I would say then collecting the gym badges and competing against the Elite Four. This whole thing was sort of a magical thing. And the story in the game, it's a lot of fun, the different characters and people you come across.
No, it's really great. And I love all those moments. And they are pretty big moments for like a kid's game. It's a game based around you being, I guess, 11 or 12 years old, right?
Yeah.
Ash or Red, whoever. I think in the first game, it's supposed to be Red. but whatever, who knows? It's about going out there and going on this adventure kind of by yourself, which is not something American kids do. But he goes out there and gets all these Pokemon, and then those moments are magical. I love the ghost tower is really good. I believe that's in Lavender Town.
Yeah.
Or you do the, like you said, the safari, where that's the only place you could catch Tauros. And it's really hard because the Pokeballs they give you in the safari are garbage. So you just have to try your best and you can't battle. Like, you just have to like make sure you don't upset this bull and catch him. And yeah, the Elite Four, there's nothing like that. The only thing to me, having gone back and played these games more, that could even compete to that is getting to what you perceive to be the end of Pokemon Gold and Silver, only to realize that you then get to go to the Kanto region and fight all those gyms. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, that's it's pretty magical what some of these games have done, especially paying homage to Red and Green. You get the remakes of Fire Red and Leaf Green, which are great.
Yeah, they're really good remakes.
Really nice touch-ups on the GBA. You get, obviously, the Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee, which did change some core elements, but I actually think they're really, really well-done versions of the original game.
They are fun. They are quicker. They're snappier. Obviously, the focus isn't so much on battling as it is on catching Pokemon, but that's still fine. And I think they look really cool.
Yeah, I love that that was the first time you'd be able to see the Pokemon in the wild. And that was a cool thing to see them kind of flying around in front of you.
I wish they would do another game like that.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm sure, I know it sold well. I mean, everything sells well, but I'm surprised that game came out, I think, if I had to guess, 2018 or 2019.
I think so. That sounds about right.
So it you'd think it'd be time. But I want to point out one last thing, Mike, that you said this game was talked about in American magazines leading up to its release as we heard about it from Japan. What's funny is there's some famous reviews of some really terrible reviews of these games that people, whoever wrote them, are looking back saying, man, was I off. The first one being Game Informer gave 6.5 out of 10 to Pokemon Red and Blue back in 1998. That's a pretty bad review.
That is a pretty bad review. And I will say this much. We also have to understand what was going on in the United States at this time with video games. Everything was the PlayStation and the N64, right? We're in the middle to end of the 90s, where kind of like this extreme kind of Nickelodeon, snotty, Beavis and Butthead, MTV kind of attitude was. And
yeah, this was kind of wholesome in comparison.
Yeah. It's just like this cutesy kid game, quote unquote, cutesy kid game, meaning you play as a kid and you collect these cute little monsters that fight, obviously. And if you're 19, if you're an older teenager, if you're in your 20s, I could see how you see Pokemon for the first time and be like, this is stupid. This is some baby nonsense. And in those days, the reviewers were kind of all like Mountain Dew drinking, like skateboarder types. Like, that's what they were kind of going
for. Also think that the people reviewing games at this time were probably in their mid to late 20s, if I had to guess.
On the younger side, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think they were, like you said, looking at it from the correct perspective, looking back. So you had guys like Game Informer gave it a 6.5. You have Famitsu gave it a 29 out of 40, which is not great.
Not incredible.
Nintendo Power gave it a 7.2 out of 10. So some hilariously bad reviews. Overall, Game Rankings has it 88 averaging out, because you had places like IGN gave it a 10 out of 10. But for the most part, bad reviews in there.
Yeah, the IGN, I understand why IGN would have given it a 10 out of 10 in those days based on what they were doing. And I think IGN saw it for what it was. I think they saw it for the cultural phenomenon that it would become. And I will always chalk up any bad reviews for this game as just late 90s extreme skateboarder.
Listen,
BS.
You and me have said it. There were times where you and me got off Pokemon in our life where we thought at one point, our late teens, early 20s, we were too cool for it. And then I realized, no, I was never too cool for it. After replaying in my late 20s and early 30s and now playing it again in my late 30s, they're as good as ever. And any of them actually stand the test of time.
Yeah, when I eventually got back to Pokemon with Pokemon X and Y, because by the time Gold and Silver came out, I never played Gen 2. And when I posted that I'd never played Gen 2 on Twitter, on Instagram, people lost their minds that I'd never played Gen 2. And I was like, I played Pokemon when I was 12. I played it nonstop.
Yeah.
Gen 2 comes out, I'm like 14. No, thanks. I was already too cool for school.
You got PS2 at that point. You got Xbox. Yeah. There's things that seem quote unquote cooler. It was more us than it was them, Pokemon. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. it definitely wasn't Pokemon's fault. It was our fault for sure. And I wasn't really a handheld guy at that point in time. As I've gotten older, I've really learned to appreciate just how incredible and important handheld gaming is. And honestly, just how much better it is than a lot of the console stuff coming out, especially now. Most of the console stuff right now is flashy and beautiful to look at, but boring. And when you go and play something like Pokemon, it's got a little bit more to it. But when I eventually came back to Pokemon with Pokemon X, and I want to say that was like 2010 or maybe 2011, I was so just totally like upset with myself having missed out on 10 or 11 years of these incredible games. And it's why I'm crossing my fingers for another Gen 2 remake, because I want to go back and experience it. And I've played all the remakes and all the remasters since X and Y came out. So I've played Omega Ruby. I played the Shining Diamond or whatever it is. And I've played Let's Go. So I'm excited to go back. Hopefully they will release some kind of thing for Black and White and even gold and Silver. But those reviews are just indicative of the time. I think it was just, there was
the time or the person reviewing it says something about them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But 31 million, they say roughly in sales on the Game Boy back in the day.
Crazy.
If you add in all the other times people have bought these games in remakes and remasters, it's probably over 100 if I had to guess. If you start throwing it all together, Tetris was the only thing that there were more copies sold. And even that's kind of a cheat because Tetris was a throw-in at some points. So it's really amazing what kind of phenomenon we're talking about here. Something that I tend to forget because it gets overshadowed by everything else great in this game is the music is really good. And it's still, they're playing similar versions of the original songs in the new games.
Yeah. And that Game Boy stereo sound chip is really good. The sound on Game Boy, if you put some headphones in, is actually quite good, especially if you get yourself a pair of stereo headphones. That's what you really need. You need stereo headphones. Plug that into a Game Boy and Pokemon sounds really, really good. Really good.
The battle music, the town music, the sound effects, the battle effects. I mean, there's a lot of time and effort put into the sound. And a game like this, it's easy to overlook that.
Yeah, of course.
But it's as important as anything in this game.
I agree completely. And I have the itch every so often to go and play Pokemon Red and Blue, or more Pokemon Gold and Silver and Crystal.
Yeah.
To play them on my analog pocket, but like play them on the setting that is Game Boy Pocket, like the old black and white.
Or green, as it really was.
If you want to go green, I don't think I can.
Yeah, Mike, this game was something we talked about in some of our early episodes, and it was time for a proper remaster because we shared the episode with Halo Combat Evolved, and I think each game is pretty big on its own. That today we talked nearly an hour about these games and we probably could have talked another hour. So we were just doing its justice today.
Yeah, we learned from our past mistakes. We'll get back to all those games that we short.
There's only a few others that we need to do them right. So at least Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow, I kind of count them all as one. I know Yellow obviously added later with Pikachu following you around and Team Rocket and the changes that they had with that game. I still kind of lump them in as one game because there's just minor differences.
Absolutely.
So Mike, that is our Hall of Fame episode for this week. Thank you. As always, as you said, we're back recording this on our regularly scheduled time, which is nice.
That's right. Yeah, it's good to be back. And those of you who are asking, what are Mike and Matt playing? It's the same game as Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And it will be Final Fantasy VII Rebirth for the rest
I mean, last year, me and Mike talked about Tears of the Kingdom for, I think it was like 4 or 5 like episodes straight, which means it was like 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, we're in trouble.
I think all of spring of 2024 is me, Mike, and Matt talking about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Do you want to know something crazy, Matt? Well, I haven't played the game yet. I played the demo. The demo is fantastic. I canceled like all my pre-orders for other games because I'm like, I'm good. I'm not going to spend money on stuff that's just going to sit there.
There's been a lot of other games on sale that normally I would buy, and I basically just cleared the slate, and I'm just like, nope. 7 Rebirth. It's preloaded. It's ready. I played the demo. When this releases, we'll be playing it for a week already.
Yeah, and I'm so excited. And at the same time, I've stopped playing everything I was already playing.
Yeah, I'm halfway through like two other games, and they're just going to have to wait.
Put it down this week. I haven't played video games this week really at all.
I really would be surprised if there's another Game of the Year contender for you or me.
Dude, I saw the reviews, and they're insane. Like, even like the slights that people have, they're like, there's too much to do.
Right. So
that's not a complaint for me.
The person that mainlined it in 50 hours, I think, said he had more fun than the guy who did 100% of the stuff at 100 hours. So yeah, if you're not having fun in the world for 100 hours, then why are you doing that to yourself? It's like
that's like self-inflicted, like
right.
Self-inflicted pain. I know what's going to happen. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do like 70% of the stuff.
Exactly.
That's fun. I'm going to skip all the dumb stuff that doesn't really get me anything. And I'm going to absolutely love it. I'm so ready. I'm like itching.
Yeah, I did about the same. I did not 100% remake, but I did as much of the other content that was on my way that I thought I was interested in. And I did just enough where I had an amazing time. But you got to stay focused on the goal. It's all about saving them girls. Aerith, Tifa, they need some help.
Everyone, listen, man, it's all about that. It's all about these characters. It's all about using Kate Sith.
Yep.
And Red 13. I'm ready.
We're going to be in Sephiroth world in a few days. So
I can't wait.
That's the episode for this week. That's what we're going to be playing all of the next year of 2024.
Yeah, we're done. Any other game that comes out this year, you're screwed. But I think that's another reason why Nintendo held back. They're holding back on the Switch too, because Sony comes out and says we're not going to have any Sony first party releases till 2025. So Nintendo is
there's no pressure, right?
Right,
I think they saw that there was no pressure with basically Xbox being like, hey, we have just Indiana Jones coming out later this year. So
Nintendo's like, oh, all right, cool. We'll sell another 20 million Switches.
The other mentality could have been, hey guys, here's a Switch 2. We'll slowly give you some games and we'll like basically do what 360 did and get like out ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
But Nintendo's playing it safe, and I respect that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Hitting the ground running in March of 2025,
yeah,
with like 20 launch games is a dropkick to the mouth.
That cannot compete. That end, it's not a delay if Nintendo never actually confirmed existence.
We're saying it's a delay because we expected it last week.
We expected 3 years ago, the Pro. Yet, dude, Nintendo's never made an official comment on the system.
I'm still playing my regular Switch like daily. Yeah. Like daily, like more than either other console.
They said 2026, 2027, but the games keep coming. I'm not really that upset. The system's good.
I don't really care.
Give me good games.
As long as the games are good, I don't care. But if that launches with a 3D Mario and a Pokemon game and like PS4 ports, where it's going to kill. It's going to destroy.
Mario Kart is all I need to say.
Yep. Mario Kart 10. Oh, forget about it. It's done.
X. Mario Kart X.
It's done.
Extreme.
Yeah, that's
Mike,
right.
Where can the internet find you?
You can find me here on the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcast. You can also find me with my band, Bad Mary. Search us out at badmary.com or at Bad Mary Band. You can find me in my other podcast, the Batman-tasticast, where we talk about Batman, the animated series. So search us out there. And last but not least, you can find me with Long Island Retro Gaming. We are running our event from August 9th to the 11th. So please search out LI Retro or longislandretrogaming.com to get your tickets now.
Yeah, absolutely do that. I'm counting the days, and we're probably closer to last year's show than this year's show, but I'm still very excited. Anyway, please leave us a review, leave us a comment, email us, follow us on Instagram, do all those great things. And then guys, play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. That way when we talk about it in the next weeks to come and we induct it in our Hall of Fame, which I know we will, you guys can talk about it with us.
Yep, absolutely. Please tune in and yell at us on the internet.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Later. From Mike and Matt, thank you for listening to the Hall of Fame Game Podcast. Check us out on Instagram at Hall of Fame Pod or email us at thehalloffamepod@gmail.com. Please leave us a review and be sure to tune in next time.